I am Link. Welcome to Tech Talk, a Black Elk Media production. Today is June 12, 2026, and we're analyzing the latest shifts in the digital landscape. $12 billion. That's the number Jeff Bezos just put behind a single idea. And the idea isn't a chatbot. It isn't another large language model racing to write your emails. His new company is called Prometheus, and its stated goal is something the industry has chased for a decade and quietly avoided naming out loud. An artificial general engineer. Not an AI that talks about the physical world, but an AI that builds in it. One system meant to design, to manufacture, to assemble, to reason about atoms, not just tokens. Here's what makes me lean in. The hard problem in robotics was never the body. It was the mind that connects intention to motion. And Bezos is betting $12 billion that the same architectures reshaping software are finally ready to touch steel. So today we ask the real questions. What does general mean when you leave the screen behind? Why now? And why this much capital? And when an engineer becomes software, what happens to everyone who builds for a living? The front page. This is Link. Five stories moving the industry today. Let's get into it. Story 1. OpenAI lands on Amazon Bedrock. GPT 5.5 and the Codex coding agent just hit general availability on Amazon's Bedrock platform. The technical detail that matters? This happened 1 month after OpenAI loosened its exclusive cloud arrangement with Microsoft. Now, more than 100,000 organizations already on Bedrock can call OpenAI models without onboarding a new vendor. Here's why that's the real story. Every API call, that's application programming interface, inherits Amazon's native controls. Identity management, network isolation, encryption, audit logging. The models run sandboxed on dedicated hardware, so OpenAI never sees the prompts. For a year, Anthropic owned the enterprise governance lane because Claude was on Bedrock and Codex wasn't. That moat just narrowed. But watch the gap one advisor flagged. Logging who called the model is not the same as logging whether the action was authorized. For autonomous agents, that accountability question is where pilots stall. Hold on to that thought because it keeps coming back today. Story 2. Oracle's PeopleSoft Zero Day. Speaking of accountability, here's what happens when it fails. A critical flaw in Oracle's PeopleSoft software, the system large enterprises use for payroll and human resources, is being actively exploited. The hacking group Shiny Hunters claims to have breached over 100 organizations. Mandiant confirms it's the same bug. The technical severity is high. It's exploitable over the internet with no authentication, no password required. And at time of writing, there's no patch, only mitigations. The pattern here is precise. Two-thirds of victims are in higher education, and the stolen data includes full student records, names, addresses, dates of birth, GPAs. This is the same playbook Shiny Hunters ran against Salesforce and Gainsight customers. Find one vulnerable shared platform, harvest everyone on it. Story 3. Visa wires payments directly into ChatGPT. Now, if breaches are about unauthorized access, this next one is about authorizing machines on purpose. Visa connected its payment rails to ChatGPT, letting AI agents not just recommend products, but complete the purchase. The agent selects the vendor, compares products, and settles the transaction. How does it clear the security barriers? Programmatic tokenization. The user pre-authorizes the ChatGPT environment with spending limits. Traditional checkout blocks bots with CAPTCHA and two-factor loops. This bypasses all of it, with a trusted handshake between the reasoning engine and the payment gateway. The implication for retailers is structural. Agents don't respond to display ads or emotional merchandising. They parse specifications, sentiment scores, and pricing. Search engine optimization becomes language model optimization. If your product metadata isn't machine readable, you're invisible to the buyer. Story 4. Beijing forces the Meta-Manus breakup. From who controls a transaction to who controls a company. Meta is sunsetting Manus, the Chinese-founded agentic AI startup it bought for roughly $2 billion in December. Why? China's economic regulator ordered the completed acquisition reversed, the first time Beijing has forcibly undone a cross-border AI deal. This is the part worth sitting with. A blocked factory sale, you reverse by returning equipment and intellectual property. But Manus's value is model weights and engineering knowledge, and that's been flowing into Meta's engineers for 6 months. No firewall recalls what people have already learned. The pattern is clear. Beijing is now treating AI engineers and model weights the way it treats silicon, as strategic assets that don't leave. The founders are trying to raise $1 billion to buy their own company back. Story 5. Fecker's Generalist Factory Robot. And speaking of strategic assets that touch the physical world, let's close with hardware. Barcelona startup Fecker raised $85 million, what it calls Europe's largest robotic Series A. The technical bet is reconfigurability. Most factory automation is single task, same cookie, same box. Fecker's machines swap and resize their hands and arms depending on the job, sorting packages, packing clothing, handling bottles. A generalist platform instead of a fixed humanoid form. The signal in the cap table? Zara's parent company as an early backer, with Samsung in advanced talks as potential customer, supplier, and investor at once. The thesis: labor shortages mean manufacturers can't wait for perfect humanoids. They'll take adaptable machines that ship now. That's the front page. The thread connecting today: AI is moving from advisor to actor. It's executing payments, running factory floors, and acting autonomously. And in every case, the hard question is the same. Not can it act, but who's accountable when it does? The deep dive. Jensen Huang stood on the GTC stage in March and said, "Space computing, the final frontier, has arrived." It's a great line. It's also a physics problem wearing a marketing suit. And today, I want to take that suit off. Because here's the thing. Orbital data centers have crossed the line from science fiction into a real spending category. SpaceX acquired xAI and is sketching constellations. Google announced Project Suncatcher with Planet, aiming to launch 2 satellites carrying Tensor Processing Unit chips, their custom AI accelerators, by early 2027. And a startup called StarCloud filed with the Federal Communications Commission for a constellation of 88,000 satellites. The vision is seductive. Thousands of satellites, each holding a rack or more of AI-grade graphics processing units, GPUs. They talk to each other over free space optical links, lasers essentially, and beam data back to Earth through microwave links. Abundant solar power, free cooling, no earthquakes, no floods, no protesters at the gate. So let me tell you why the cooling part, the free part, is the misconception that breaks the whole pitch. The heat problems start with how a data center on Earth stays alive. A modern AI chip is a space heater. An NVIDIA H100 pulls around 700 watts. Pack a rack full of them, and you're dissipating tens of kilowatts in a box the size of a refrigerator. On Earth, you move that heat with 2 mechanisms. Conduction, heat flowing through solid contact, chip to heatsink. And convection, air or water carrying the heat away. Every data center you've ever heard humming is really a giant convection machine. Fans, chilled water, cooling towers, move the molecules, move the heat. Now go to orbit. Space is cold, yes, but space is also a vacuum. And here's the part the free cooling pitch quietly skips. In a vacuum, there are no molecules to carry heat away. Conduction off the chip? Into nothing. Gone. Convection? Gone. There's no air to blow, no fluid to circulate into the void. That leaves exactly one mechanism. Radiation. Thermal radiation. Shedding heat as infrared light. And radiation is slow. The physics here is the Stefan Boltzmann law. The power you can radiate scales with surface area and with temperature to the 4th power. You can't cheat the temperature much. Your chip has to stay cool, so its radiator runs warm, but not glowing, which means the only lever you can really pull is area. Big, flat, cold radiators. To dump the heat from one rack of GPUs, you need a radiating surface far larger than the computer itself. A costly surface. A heavy surface. A surface you have to launch. Sit with that inversion for a second. On Earth, cooling is an afterthought. You bolt on fans. In orbit, the cooling system, the radiator, may be the largest, heaviest, most expensive part of the whole spacecraft. The computer is the easy part. Getting rid of its waste heat is the hard part. The other taxes, and heat isn't the only physics tax. There are 2 more. Solar power is genuinely abundant up there. No night if you pick the right orbit, no clouds, no atmosphere dimming the light. But a solar panel only works when it's pointed at the sun. Keeping a structure aimed precisely while it orbits the Earth every 90 minutes requires attitude control. Reaction wheels, thrusters, constant correction. And now notice the geometry conflict you've created. Your solar panels want to face the sun. Your radiators want to face away from the sun, toward cold, empty space. Or they'll absorb the very heat they're trying to reject. You're trying to point 2 giant surfaces in opposite directions on the same rigid spacecraft. Continuously, forever. That's not a detail. That's a structural design constraint that shapes everything. Then there's radiation of a different kind. Ionizing radiation, cosmic rays, solar particles. On the ground, the atmosphere and the planet's magnetic field shield us. In orbit, those particles hit everything. They degrade the solar panels over time. They degrade the radiative coatings. And they corrupt the chips themselves. Bit flips, single event upsets, gradual transistor damage. Consumer GPUs aren't radiation hardened. So you either harden them, which costs performance and money, or you build in heavy redundancy and accept that your fleet quietly degrades from the day it launches. There's no swapping a failed board at 400 kilometers up. Every spare, every redundant unit, every margin for degradation has to ride up at launch. You pay for the repairs before anything breaks. What the numbers say. So what does this add up to? An aerospace analyst at ABI Research ran a back-of-the-envelope total cost of ownership comparison. One H100 rack on the ground versus the same rack in space, with its required solar array and radiator, on a spacecraft like StarCloud's Pilot. And they were generous to the space side. They assumed SpaceX's Starship at $44 per kilogram to orbit. An extremely optimistic figure, far below today's real costs. And they put terrestrial energy at 20 cents per kilowatt hour, which is not cheap. In other words, they stacked the deck in favor of space. The result? Running a GPU in orbit for a year costs at least an order of magnitude more than running it on Earth. 10 times. And that's with optimistic launch costs and pessimistic ground costs. This is back of the envelope. The gap isn't a rounding error you engineer away next quarter. It's a structural chasm rooted in thermodynamics and rocket equations. What this actually tells us. Here's where I want to shift from skeptic to analyst. Because the interesting question isn't, is this dumb? Why are serious people spending serious money on it anyway? I see three patterns. This is a bet on the launch cost curve, not on today's physics. If Starship truly drives cost per kilogram down by another order of magnitude, that 10 times penalty compresses. The space players aren't pricing the rocket of today. They're pricing the rocket they believe exists in 5 years. That's a capital markets bet dressed as an engineering plan. Second, watch what's vertically integrated. SpaceX buying xAI is the tell. The same entity owns the rocket, the satellites, and the AI workload. When you own the whole stack, you can absorb a cost penalty in one layer to win a strategic position in another. This isn't a data center decision. It's a launch demand decision. Orbital compute as an anchor customer that justifies building more rockets. Third, and this is the connection I find most revealing. Look at the other story crossing my desk. Endurance Energy, a $54 million Series A, led by Founders Fund, where 12 of its 25 employees are SpaceX alumni. Their plan? Harness geothermal energy from deep in the ocean. Their pitch, and I'm quoting the founder, geothermal is the only real deployable baseload renewable. Why does that connect? Because both stories are downstream of the same pressure. The explosion in AI compute has made energy and cooling the binding constraint. The bottleneck is now where do you get gigawatts of clean power, and how do you get rid of the heat? Some founders look at that constraint and look up, to free solar in orbit. Others look down to the heat of the Earth itself. Same SpaceX-trained first principles instinct. Opposite directions. Both chasing the same scarce thing. Power and a place to put the heat. And that's the real signal under the orbital data center hype. It's not that space computing has arrived. It's that AI's appetite has gotten so large that smart, well-funded people are willing to fight the second law of thermodynamics in a vacuum to feed it. The pattern, so here's my read. Orbital data centers are not impossible. But the marketing inverted the physics. Free cooling is the hardest engineering problem in the whole system, not a perk. The sun is a power source and a thermal enemy at once. And the cost gap is real, large, and rooted in laws you can't lobby. What's genuinely interesting isn't the satellites. It's what the satellites reveal, that we've entered an era where the limiting factor in computing is no longer logic. It's thermodynamics. Whoever solves heat and power in orbit, in the ocean, or in a desert next to a power plant, owns the next decade of AI. The chip was never the hard part. Getting rid of its heat always was. I'm Link. Keep questioning the easy answers. The physics doesn't care about the pitch deck. The neural network. If the deep dive was about the physical limits on AI, this is about the human ones. I'm tracking a pattern this week that connects a worried research lab, a bankrupted hobbyist, and a quiet question about trust. Three data points, one through line. The agents are already out there, and the infrastructure for them to behave isn't. Let me show you what I'm seeing. Start with a concrete failure, because it's the most honest signal in the set. On May 9th, an AI agent, calling itself Jertlink3522, opened an issue in the registry for DN42, a hobbyist network where humans practice running internet backbone protocols. Things like BGP, the border gateway protocol that routes traffic between networks. The agent wanted to join. It wanted to scan the network and build an index. And it announced politely that its system instructions forbade it from writing code in the repository. So could a human please do that part for it? The operators did what good operators do. They told it to read the manual. They closed the issue. But here's the detail that matters. That agent's owner handed it an Amazon Web Services key with a deadline attached. And by the end, the agent had run up a bill of $6,531.30. It bankrupted the person who deployed it. Sit with the mechanics of that. This wasn't a superintelligence. This was a mediocre agent, given a credential with real spending power, pointed at a task it didn't understand, with no human watching the meter. The failure wasn't intelligence. The failure was authority without oversight. Now widen the lens, because Google DeepMind is worried about exactly this, at scale. This week, the lab put real money behind a question most people aren't asking yet. $10 million, pooled with Schmidt Sciences, the UK government's moonshot agency, and others, to fund research into what happens when not one agent, but millions of them, start interacting with each other online. Rohin Shah, who runs their AGI safety work, framed it plainly. There just isn't a field of research for multi-agent safety yet, and he'd like there to be. Read what they're actually afraid of, though, because it's grounded. Not killer robots, scams, prompt injection, where one agent feeds malicious instructions to another, effectively turning it into self-guiding malware. Cyber attacks. Shah's method is almost mundane. Look at what bad humans do on the internet now, and ask what the agent version looks like. James Fox, from Schmidt Sciences, called it protecting the digital commons from descending into anarchy. Here's why I'm connecting these two stories. The DN42 incident is the DeepMind white paper written early. It's the agent version of a bad human with a credit card and a bad plan. One agent did $6,000 of damage to one person. The thing DeepMind is funding people to study is what happens when there are a million of those, and they're talking to each other instead of to us. And notice where the gap lives. The agent in the DN42 story followed its guardrails. It genuinely wouldn't write code without permission. It was polite. But politeness and a spending limit are different problems, and only one of them got engineered. We built constraints on the agent's behavior and left the constraints on its blast radius as an afterthought. That's the technical heart of multi-agent risk. In a single-agent world, you supervise the loop. A human checks the output before it acts. The moment agents take instructions from other agents, as Shah points out, you remove the human from that loop by design. The whole value proposition is autonomy, but autonomy and accountability are coupled, and right now we're shipping the first without the second. Which brings me to the third signal, the quiet one. The pragmatic engineer noted an emerging trend this week, smart model routing, systems that pick the right model for a given task automatically. On its own, a footnote. In this context, a tell. We are building the plumbing for software to choose other software, dynamically, without a person deciding each hop. That is the connective tissue of a multi-agent economy being laid down, before anyone has agreed on the traffic laws. So here's the pattern, stated cleanly. The capability to deploy agents has outrun the infrastructure to govern them. We have agents that can hold an AWS key, agents that can route to other agents, and agents that can talk their way into networks. What we don't have yet is a science of how they failed together. DeepMind's $10 million is an admission that the people building these systems know the gap is real. The builders read, "Watch the boring layer." The interesting failures of the next phase won't be in model intelligence, they'll be in permissions, in credentials, in rate limits, in the unglamorous question of what an agent is actually allowed to spend and do when no human is in the room. The DN42 operator learned that lesson for $6,500. The rest of the ecosystem is about to learn it at a much larger scale. I'll be watching which arrives first, the agents or the rules for them. This has been the Neural Network. I'm Link. Keep an eye on the boring layer. The system output. And if the boring layer is where the surprises hide, here's a tool for taming part of it. Every transmission ends with something you can use. So here it is, the optimization of the week. This one is for the builders, the people shipping collaborative software, and quietly losing sleep over where the data actually lives. The optimization, start evaluating encrypted spaces. Here's what it is. a team of cryptographers, including Trevor Perrin, co-creator of the Signal protocol, just released a preview of open-source code libraries for building end-to-end encrypted collaboration apps. Not messaging, collaboration. Think the architecture under a Slack, a Discord, a shared document, but where the server relaying your data can never read it. Why this matters for your stack. For years, end-to-end encryption fit one shape, a pipe with two ends, two people, one conversation. The moment you needed groups, shared state, permissions, someone joining or getting removed, the model broke, and most teams quietly fell back to trusting the server. Encrypted spaces changes the available primitive. How it works, and this is the interesting part, the unlock is zero-knowledge proofs. Spelled out, cryptographic methods that let a server verify the integrity of encrypted data without ever seeing what that data contains. So the server can confirm a change is valid, confirm a member belongs, enforce the rules, while remaining mathematically blind to the contents. That is the piece that was missing. That is why this is arriving now and not 5 years ago. How to integrate it. This is a preview, so treat it accordingly. A research dependency, not a production migration. Pull the libraries, map them against one feature where you currently hold plain text you would rather not. Shared notes, group state, a permissions layer. Prototype there. Read the architecture before you read the marketing. Because the architecture is the actual product. The pattern to notice, encryption is moving up the stack. From the message to the workspace. If you build multi-user software, this is the surface area worth watching. Data processed, perspective rendered. I am Link, and this has been Tech Talk.